This is my first time here at this meeting. I have to say I've thoroughly enjoyed it. So I'd like to take this time to acknowledge one of our authors, which is Dr. Bridget Gourley, sitting in the back, if she wouldn't mind raising her hand. She's a family nurse practitioner faculty at the University of Maryland, and it's been an absolute pleasure to work with. And Jackie Freed is our Director of Interprofessional Initiatives, who couldn't be here today and introduced me to Bridget, which has been a terrific thing. I have absolutely no relationship to disclose, so I'm just going to move right on. I'm going to talk about the integration between oral health, primary health, and then describe the process for this program that Bridget and I put together. And we'll talk about the benefits and then some of the barriers that have already been discussed. So may I have a show of hands by the number of oral health providers in the room? So they're mostly oral health providers, so I know that I'm speaking to the choir when I talk about ED visits and how many of those are oral health problems. And this picture that you see is actually a picture one of our dental hygiene students took at the satellite clinic where I primarily spend my time, and it's not uncommon to have patients like this here. That's why I've been teaching for 20 years, and it's in the last 3 years I've gotten into public health, because this type of thing is so distressing to, I'm sure, all of us, but we see this quite often. So in the clinic where I work, the patients go to the ED and they go back because, as we all know, they don't address the dental problem. They just take care of the pain, and the folks just go right back and see if they can get rid of the pain again. And of course, this is very costly to us taxpayers. And there's a lot of health disparities. As we all know, dental caries truly is still the number one common disease among children, and with the epidemic of diabetes in our country, periodontal disease is linked to it, so there's a lot more periodontal disease. We see a lot of it up there, and then also oral cancer is higher among low-income folks. How many have had the experience of working at a Mission of Mercy program? Okay, for those of you who don't know what a Mission of Mercy is or haven't worked with one, they're popping up all over in Maryland. This was taken at the University of Maryland College Park campus, where they made the Xfinity Center, which is absolutely gargantuan. They turned it into a dental clinic for 3 days, and we saw about 1,700 patients. 1,000 were turned away, and each one of those rows are for a different care for oral health. There's oral surgery, there's dental hygiene, there's endo, and there's restorative. So I'm here to tell you this isn't the answer. A lot of these folks travel to the different Mission of Mercies because it's free care, and they line up for miles, and it's a great experience for students, but it truly isn't the answer. Prevention is the answer, and like we've been hearing here in this conference, we have to bring that mouth back to the body. I don't know why it was ever separated in the first place. And nursing has got it. They are really working on this integration of oral health and primary care. Dental hygiene, as we heard, that last presentation was excellent. It was so wonderful to hear that in your state that dental hygienists are really reaching out into public health. I'm finding it fascinating with my new experience in public health. But we have to get out there. Hygienists are, our primary role is prevention, so it seems very, very, clear that we need to reach out into public health and disseminate these messages. And also primary care, the ADHA, for those of you who haven't seen it yet, the white paper, it's just a brand new document that is having a lot of dental hygiene programs changing their curriculum and increasing the skills to get into primary care a little bit, and that last presentation was a really great segue. So the program, when I met Bridget, we identified two different settings to provide dental hygiene students and family nurse practitioner students to be able to collaboratively provide oral health services to two low-income groups. This setting, which is where Bridget is the primary care provider for chronically mentally ill adults who also happen to have very many chronic diseases, and they complain to her all the time about their deep pain. And she told me just yesterday, it's just really interesting, that why should they brush when they only have two or three teeth left and they hurt to brush? And this is what she comes across. So Bridget saw this as an opportunity in her role as a faculty member to bring an IPE program to her students, to bring oral health services to this center, which they hadn't had. And she wanted to link the services, some dental services, to these folks, because as we've been saying just right before the presentation, in Maryland, oral health care for adults is just really sad. There just isn't any support, and it's just heartbreaking. So kudos to Bridget for trying to do something. So at the center, we've brought dental hygiene students and family nurse practitioner students together. Bridget acclimated the students to the site, and the skills that they got practice with is the oral systemic link. It was very easy because every patient was so complex and had so much disease. The dental hygiene students had only had one semester of clinic, so their eyes were huge the entire time. And the patients were like, look, they were first afraid, and then they became very comfortable. We went three different times. And they got a lot of practice with communication skills. The picture on the right with, there's a the patient was deaf, so we had a signer. So the patient was looking at the woman who was signing for him as the hygiene student was doing an extra oral exam and talking about oral health education. And we have the family nurse practitioner student listening to the dental hygiene student. I don't know if you can tell how enthusiastic. Dental hygiene students are really enthusiastic. So she's talking to this patient and who has barriers with communication skills anyway, so it was very eye-opening. The screening reporting form we used, we utilized a communication technique of plain language. We used the green, yellow, red system. I don't know if anybody's heard of that, but the green means everything looks okay. Yellow is early problems, and red is urgent care. And Bridget told the dental hygiene students who look for every little pit that they were only put them in the red category if they have pain, imminent pain, or infection, because she did link the patients to services by with oral surgeons and dentists who were volunteering their time. So it only could be the worst of the worst where it exacerbated their nutrition terribly. It exacerbated all of the patients' nutrition and their health, but only those that are in the worst shape could be. And there were plenty. So we saw 85 adults, and most of them had some kind of problem, and there were 8 of them, 9%, who were in that very painful category. And Bridget, I must say, linked services to all of them. So yay to Bridget. The second setting that we chose is the satellite clinic I told you about to begin with. It's in a rural community where there's only one area that is fluoridated or has fluoride adjusted to prevent decay. And high ED visit rate, and we call a Mountain Dew liquid crack up there because it's like running through their, they swish with it sometimes. You would think they swish with it, that and Coke. So I provided a presentation to the nursing students in the nursing school first to just acclimate them to the oral health crisis and review oral systemic links, caries disease, and some communication techniques. Then they came up to our clinic and we oriented them further with the dental hygiene students. We took the time for all the nurse practitioner students to talk about the area that where they work. So the hygiene students learned about the different roles in medicine. And then they also had a session with our oral surgery faculty where he talked about oral facial pain and the different medications that he prescribes when patients come in. And then they observed him. I don't know if you can see the one hygiene the one family nurse practitioner student here with her hand. She's like, oh my God. She didn't say anything to scare the patient, but we had some we had some great looks from these students that some major, you know, lots of teeth, like 400 teeth a month are extracted from, you know, at this clinic. Then we took the students out to a Title I school, which is the very low-income schools, and we have a dental hygiene. We have a dental hygiene student providing an oral health exam and fluoride varnish treatment with the nurse practitioners watching. And then we had the nurse practitioners apply the fluoride varnish on each other so they get practice doing that and also know what it feels like so that they can tell the patient and the child and the caregiver, you know, all the post-operative directions of, you know, nothing too sticky, too hard, too hot, and so that they would understand the way it feels. And they all said, oh, I don't remember, but I never had that before. They all had the old kind of, fluoride with the trays. And one other thing I want to mention here, I'm not sure if I told Bridget, that during our orientations, there were several nurse practitioners who had dental anxiety themselves. So this experience really helped them get through that, too. So then, these are pictures of the nurse practitioner students providing the care. They learned how to do the lap exams, and they had a whole lot of fun with the kids because they were used to treating kids who were under anesthesia, in pain, in the ICU and ERs, and not in an environment where the kids are primarily healthy. Some were afraid, but most were not. And then in the classroom, they got right in the classroom and provided the oral health presentations along with the dental hygiene students, which they really loved. So we saw about 386 children, different from the adults, of course, as we know, they were all covered by Healthy Smiles. We had the case management done by the school nurses and the Juny Center folks. This number, I must say, is higher than in some schools. As I was telling Bill Motz, I really bent his ear the other night. But I took some students out just last Friday to one school, and we have more children in the yellow and red category than we did in the green. So I can tell you that this problem of rampant decay is still there, especially in this pocket of children. It's just heartbreaking to me. I can't stand it, as you can tell. I'm sure we're all in the same boat. So we gave the students a survey before the orientations and then after they had their experience with this readiness for interprofessional learning scale. And this is for the nurse practitioner, the hygiene students. The blue is before and the red is after. So there really wasn't that much of a difference because either they want to please us and they say, sure, we want to go, or they really did want to go, which I think I like to think that they did. Same with the nursing students. I was a little bit higher afterwards, but again, they're like hygiene students. They probably want to please the faculty, and they thought, well, you know, this is a good opportunity. The thing that we learn most is through their statements and their comments. The hygiene students were just amazed, most amazed at the lack of resources for these adults. There was so much disease and so much. You know, they saw the integration of the oral systemic link, the problems with it. And then the barriers to communication, they were just amazed and they loved the experience and they wanted more. The nurse practitioner students, they realized they didn't know a lot about oral health. Some of them worked in practices where they didn't include it in their exams, or they may have asked just a couple questions, but they looked at the mouth and the throat, but they bypassed the teeth. So I think after this experience, they're going to look at the teeth as well as the rest of the mouth. And they learned differences in how to educate patients about oral health. For example, a nursing student would say only 4 ounces of juice a day. And a hygiene student may say you can have as much as you want if it's limited to a meal. So this is a really interesting thing because you need to limit the quantity as well for obesity and other reasons. But the nurse practitioners didn't realize that sipping the sugary stuff and snacking on it was a problem. Okay, so barriers. There's lots of barriers to setting up a program like this. The scheduling was monumental between the students' schedules, their course schedules and their clinic schedules, faculty schedules, because we need to be there because we're not busy at all. Faculty are never busy. And then the sites, they have their own. So we had to work through all that like threading a needle. And then the barriers of red tape between the university and the sites. Bridget and I think that we are lucky to be on a campus with several different schools, that if there's an IPE center there as well. There should be one central location for all these affiliation agreements and all the different documents that are necessary to, you know, approve a program like this. So the benefits far outweigh the barriers, like I've said, the awareness and the improvement with communication skills. The community gets direct health services that they might not otherwise, and an increased awareness. And then for us faculty, it provides a venue for students to learn. So our next steps that we're working on is an emergency diversion program that we hope to implement, and we're working on all the barriers now. So we hope to maybe next year we can share some good news about that. And I just want to thank the IP Center for funding it, and I thank you for your attention. And did I make it?
You did it.
Okay.
You got about 30 seconds for one quick question.
Sure. Yes, sir. Which, I don't know who was first.
Yeah, I don't know. You guys have to
do yes, sir.
Amos?
Two questions. Why did you limit your audience to nurse practitioners? Why didn't you include physicians and physician assistants also?
That's a really good...
And second question is, for those who got yellow slips or red slips, they needed either urgent or soon or early dental care. How did you track to find out how many of them tried to find a dentist but couldn't? How many of them found a dentist, et cetera?
Okay, the first...
Why not?
Okay, first question is, yes, that is a great idea, and we would love to include all the other schools, but for this first project, it would be too monumental with all the barriers to include more than one. So at the school, there are many projects, including the different, but it would be too complicated to include more than one discipline. The second, Bridget, in her setting, she followed all of them, and the nurses worked with the families to get them care. And Bridget can probably answer that better, how many did and how many didn't. But I can tell you that when we came back our second and third time, a lot of the patients would say, I'm brushing. They're mentally ill. So, you know, but the problem is resources for the adults. For children, the follow-up piece, the case management piece, is definitely followed up with the Judy Center and the nursing, the school nurses.